From time to time, we focus on health issues in the news, and today we will bone up on osteoporosis. Get it? Sorry about that. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, October 10th. Several new studies on osteoporosis were released this past weekend at the annual meeting of the American Society for Bone and Mineral Research, including a couple on the safety of calcium supplements and vitamin D for men and women with osteoporosis. One on how weak muscles are also a culprit in bone fractures. And more. We'll discuss some of this latest research, and we'll welcome your questions about osteoporosis for our guest expert. Are you at risk? What are you doing to prevent osteoporosis? Do you have osteoporosis? And what can we all do to deal with this common bone disease? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is a consultant for the American Society for Bone and Mineral Research. He is also an endocrinologist with the Mayo Clinic, specializing in osteoporosis. Let me welcome Dr. Bart Clark. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. So let's just start with osteoporosis 101. What is osteoporosis?
Well, osteoporosis is a weakening of the bones that occurs in everybody as we get older and predominantly affecting women, but also men. And it leads to fractures that occur in certain sites in the skeleton, typically the hip or backbone or wrist, but also other sites as well. And the main consequence of osteoporosis is fractures that develop usually at older ages.
Yeah. So how does it develop?
Well, it's thought to be predominantly due to natural aging, partly. In women, it also seems to be strongly tied to estrogen deficiency after the menopause. So those are probably the two main causes. What causes bone loss with aging is complicated because there's many different causes recognized, but they're all operative in all of us to some degree.
Mm-hmm. If estrogen deficiency is a big one for women after menopause, what causes it primarily in men?
Yeah, so in men, estrogen deficiency turns out to also be a major cause. Mm-hmm. Testosterone deficiency contributes as well. You might wonder why estrogen would cause bone loss in men, but it turns out testosterone is converted into estrogen in men. Mm-hmm. And so as men get older, testosterone levels will drop, and then estrogen levels do as well. So that's a big part of it. Mainly, those are the things that cause bone loss in the 50s and 60s as people get older.
It's interesting. I guess why is it estrogen must play a role in strong bones?
It does. It's the main stimulator for bone health. It helps the skeleton gain bone density in younger years in life so that women, as they go through the onset of their menstrual cycles in their mid-teenage years, typically they gain bone density quite rapidly around that time, and men do as well. As they go through puberty, they'll gain bone density fairly quickly. So estrogen stimulates the gain in bone density in younger people, but then it preserves bone density as we go through middle life and then up until around the time of menopause or later age in men.
So how common is osteoporosis?
Well, it turns out that the current figures, the estimates are that probably 1 in 2 women, if women are not treated for osteoporosis, will develop osteoporosis during their lifetime. In men, it's about 1 out of 4. As it turns out.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
Yeah, well, my goodness. So why is 1 out of 2 women lucky and they don't get it?
Well, so it's, again, a combination mm-hmm. of factors. All of us have got genetic factors that protect us to some degree against osteoporosis. Some of us also inherit genes that cause osteoporosis in different ways. So that's part of the story. Part of it is nutrition and diet and exercise. All of those are usually helpful in preserving bone density, but sometimes certain dietary patterns will cause bone loss. For example, if you don't have enough calcium or vitamin D in your diet. So all of these are operating, you know, through life, and at a certain age when the estrogen levels tend to drop, most of us then will lose bone density to some degree anyway.
Well, since you brought up calcium and vitamin D, let's Can you talk to us a little bit about this research that was released over the weekend? We don't have to go in, you know, great detail, but apparently it's there was some concern that calcium supplements could increase the risk of a heart attack or other heart-related conditions, especially in older men, and this study said, don't worry about that?
That's right. So there's three studies that have been published in the last 2 to 3 years that have concluded that calcium supplements, at least beyond a certain amount of supplement, could increase the risk of heart disease, heart attack, most of the studies have shown. More recent research looking at larger databases and perhaps longer-term follow-up have not concluded that. And the study that you refer to that was released just here, I think, until October 4, came out and showed that in men, at least, who take calcium supplements, there was no increased risk of heart attack. So that was a significant study with a significant finding also. There was another study that looked at women and concluded the same thing. So we have, in a sense, conflicting information, but as in most of these cases, time will tell as more studies are done and better studies are done.
Yeah, the headline I see for women, new study confirms calcium and vitamin D supplements are a safe option for older women. There was a concern about vitamin D as well?
Yeah, well, the combination of the two, because vitamin D helps absorb calcium, if you're taking a calcium supplement, you might get a boost in your calcium absorption to the point that that could contribute to heart disease. But the study, is, as you said, does not show that.
So what is the recommendation then for whether we should all of us be taking calcium and vitamin D?
Yeah, so the current recommendation right now is that for men and women up till age 50, that all of us should be taking a total daily intake of about 1,000 milligrams of elemental calcium in our food or supplements. If we obtain this through the diet, there's no reason to take a supplement. But most of us, it turns out, take about half that. We get on average around 500 to 600 milligrams of elemental calcium through our diet. So most of us would benefit from a calcium tablet, 500 or 600 milligrams once a day.
So is that chocolate chew that I have a good supplement?
It's a very good way.
It tastes better, too.
Way as well.
Yeah. All right. And then as for the vitamin D?
Yeah. So for vitamin D, the recommendation is for women up till age 50, it should be 600 units a day. And then after that, up till age 70, it should be 600 units per day. And then after that, 800 units per day. The same applies to men.
What else can we be doing to prevent osteoporosis?
Okay. Well, certainly things that can be changed about our diets or lifestyle would be helpful here. And so things such as calcium intake in the diet, if you're not having a good calcium intake through your diet, you can modify that with foods that are appealing to you, that don't upset the stomach, don't cause other problems. Vitamin D, of course, comes partly through the diet, partly through supplements, partly through sunlight exposure. There's been concern with skin cancer increase in recent years, so that in general we don't recommend people get over amount of sunlight exposure, but a certain amount per day is helpful as well. So those are key things. Other things that lifestyle habits that might worsen bone loss would be things like cigarette smoking, excess alcohol intake, or too much caffeine in the diet. So those are all things that we can change or modify if we want. We can't change our genes yet, so that's another factor that's there in the background. And, of course, some of us are more prone to osteoporosis anyway. Others are less so. But beyond those things, there's certain medications, certain medical conditions that people develop that will cause a worsening of osteoporosis in general.
Yeah, we'll talk more about some of those. But what about someone recommended to me that impact exercise would strengthen bones?
Yeah, and there's good evidence for that. Any form of exercise in which you bear weight on your feet, so walking, jogging, treadmilling, whatever, all of those are good things. If you do high-impact activities, high-impact aerobics, for example, that also helps, but even low-impact aerobics will help. So general activity on your feet is very good. For cardiovascular fitness, certainly bicycle riding, swimming, other activities where you're not bearing weight on your feet are still very good and, you know, recommended as well. But on your feet is the key thing for osteoporosis prevention, because the entire skeleton gets the workout when you're on your feet exercising.
Well, a couple years ago, I did have my first bone density test. Mm-hmm. Should we be having those on a regular basis? Is there a time when we're supposed to have our first one?
Yeah, so the current recommendation is if you have a fracture or have another medical condition that would make you at increased risk of osteoporosis, basically bone density testing should probably start around age 45 or so in women. And if you have a family history of fractures, hip fracture in particular, in your parents, then around age 50, even if you yourself haven't had a fracture. In men right now, the recommendation is age 65 to be screened for bone density if it hasn't been done before that because of a fracture or other medical condition.
And if that comes back, that bone density is good, then never mind, or what then?
It'd be nice if it was that way, but as things change, as we all age, even if you're in good shape at age 45 or 65, things can change as you get older. So usually it's recommended to have your bone density test repeated sometime down the road, and there's controversy about how often to have it checked. Most would say, well, if you're normal at the ages that we've talked about, probably 5 years would be reasonable, although some would argue for a longer wait before you check the bone density the next time.
Yeah, so that I did see a headline, a recent study that said, that was saying, well, maybe you don't need them as frequently, but no. The jury's still out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one study, maybe the one you're referring to, said even if you're normal when they screen you at age, 45 or 50, you could wait 17 years on average before you should have it checked again. And I think most physicians would say that might be true for some people, but, we see a whole lot of other people who something else happens and then all of a sudden they have trouble sooner than 17 years.
Oh, that's right. It was indicating that osteoporosis, the actual, the weakening of the bone takes a long time.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it takes, decades really, usually past midlife before we get into trouble. And, this is why most people, when they break their hip, they're up in their 70s or 80s or even older. But occasionally we've got people younger than that, 50s and 60s, that are breaking bones too. And these are things that are preventable in this day and age.
We are talking about all things related to osteoporosis, talking about bone health, in part because some new research came out just over the weekend on osteoporosis. And we're welcoming your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Your experiences, maybe. Do you suffer from osteoporosis? Are you trying to prevent it? How are you treating it? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Bart Clark. He is an endocrinologist with the Mayo Clinic. He specializes in osteoporosis. He is also a counselor with the American Society for Bone and Mineral Research, which is the organization that held an annual meeting over the weekend and released several new studies on osteoporosis. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the latest research about osteoporosis, and our guest physician is here to answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Bart Clark, who is an endocrinologist with the Mayo Clinic specializing in osteoporosis. And looking at your bio from the Mayo Clinic, Dr. Clark, I see that you also specialize in other forms of osteoporosis, including steroid-induced osteoporosis and transplant-associated osteoporosis. I would guess that those two can be connected since you take steroids after transplant.
Yeah, that's right. So people who take high-dose steroid therapy, usually in the form of prednisone or other similar versions of that, do have significant bone loss, and this occurs with people being treated, for example, with rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, but it also occurs in the transplant setting, and it's multiple factors contributing to the bone loss in these settings because the underlying disease that leads to the transplant many times causes bone loss too, but then the steroids, when they're added, that is an added factor that will cause significant bone loss and in many cases fractures.
Well, you know, I'm not going to name names due to privacy reasons, but I know someone very well who had a transplant and who is experiencing some hip and back pain. An X-ray showed almost ghosty-like images of his bones, and I don't think that he's being treated for osteoporosis. Could that be what he's got?
Yeah, certainly if the bones look thin on the X-ray, you know, that would be a tip-off that maybe he does have some bone loss. And most commonly these days in the major centers, at least, they're being tested for osteoporosis even before transplant so that we know who has trouble before they get to the transplant, because some do. But even for those who don't have trouble before transplant, usually we're screening their bone density within a year to two after the transplant and then as needed after that.
Well, maybe it's the treatment's different for someone with a transplant, but generally we didn't get to this yet, and we do have a lot of callers. We'll get to them in a moment. But what is the first step in treatment of osteoporosis if it's determined you have it or are at severe risk for it?
Right. So we would certainly optimize the calcium and vitamin D intake. That's a key part of this, because the medicines that we have to treat osteoporosis work, but they work much better if you take your calcium and your vitamin D the way it's recommended. Then we would also try to minimize the influence of negative factors like alcohol or cigarette smoking or too much caffeine intake in the diet, because these are things that don't cost anything to the patient, and they certainly are quite effective in helping the bone density improve. And then in terms of situations where there has been a fracture or the bone density is quite low, usually there's a recommendation for some form of medication, and that choice depends on the patient, their age, other factors about them that might limit the use of some of the medications. But there's a range of medications out there now that could be used that are very effective at preventing bone loss and in most cases raising bone density on treatment so that the fracture risk is reduced significantly.
Let's take some of our callers. Nancy in Milwaukee is with us first. Hello, Nancy.
Good morning to you. I am 81 years old. I was diagnosed over 20 years ago of having Barrett's throat, so consequently I've been on one or another of the proton pump inhibitors for over 20 years. And I am very fearful because all the clippings that come along with this drug I take indicate that just the very taking of this drug that serves very well one purpose is very detrimental to my bones. So I'm wondering what the possibilities would be in your estimation that I could go off this drug, the proton pump inhibitors, and make some kind of a substitute that would not be so injurious to my bones.
Yeah, so you know, the concern about the proton pump inhibitors is that several studies have shown that people who take these are at higher risk of hip fracture, for example. Some of these studies were done overseas, some were done here. The consensus is that they do seem to have a mild negative effect on the bone density, all right? And there's not been a lot of research yet figuring out how to get around this, but what we're doing in most cases currently is saying if you need a proton pump inhibitor, because it's so effective at preventing bleeding, ulcers, and related issues that it's a very good thing to take. You should take that. Obviously, if you don't need it, don't take it because it has consequences as well. But if you need it, keep taking it, and then adjust your dietary calcium, your vitamin D intake to be appropriate. Usually in the setting of proton pump inhibitor therapy, we'd say instead of taking calcium carbonate, take calcium citrate, which doesn't depend on stomach acid to get absorbed like calcium carbonate does. And then if you need medication, you can take any medication in the book, essentially, that would help prevent bone loss if you have a problem with low bone density.
Nancy, thanks for the call, and good luck. Mary in Pewaukee is with us now. Hi, Mary.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
Dr. Clark and Joy. Hi. I wanted to just point out that I had a bone density at the age of about 58, and they put me on a medication that has biophosphonates in it, and I was not aware of that right away, but once I found out that it was in there, I went off of it. My doctor that prescribed it had happened to leave and transfer, and I had a new doctor, and she said, well, why did she even put you on this? I said, I really don't know, but I took myself off because I felt that the the negative effects of something that is in laundry detergent might be worse than possible bone bone density loss, and I, you know, opted to do more exercise and weight training. I guess I was just really calling to let other people be aware, and I didn't know if you had brought this up or were planning on.
Yeah, so, you know, the decision about whether to stay on the medication or to start the medication, I think even when it's recommended, it's a personal choice. You have to think about your own situation, your family history, other factors about you that might influence your decision. In general, these bisphosphonate medications you mentioned, they're good for bone density protection. They raise bone density. They reduce fractures by about half of what you would have had otherwise. And if you're at high risk, that's a good thing. On the other hand, if your risk for fracture is not very high because your bone density is not too bad, in general, you don't necessarily have to take these medications. So, I mean, I think that's a choice that you have to make after talking about it with your doctor. He knows you or she knows you better than we do. And in general, even though they're good things, you have to kind of put these things in the mix for personal and other reasons that you might want to take the medication.
Yeah. Well, we'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio coming up next. And then we'll continue talking about all things related to osteoporosis and bone health. We are talking with Dr. Bart Clark. He is an endocrinologist with the Mayo Clinic. He specializes in osteoporosis. He's also a counselor for the American Society for Bone and Mineral Research, which over the weekend had its annual meeting and released several studies, new research on osteoporosis, including the safety of calcium supplements and vitamin D for men and women. We welcome your questions and experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. We will continue our discussion about osteoporosis in this half hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 6:37 on this Thursday, October the 9th. Several new studies on osteoporosis were released this past weekend at the annual meeting of the American Society for Bone and Mineral Research, including a couple on the safety of calcium supplements and vitamin D for men and for women who have osteoporosis. We are talking about some of this new research and welcoming your questions about anything related to osteoporosis for our guest physician, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Dr. Bart Clark. He is an endocrinologist with the Mayo Clinic, specializing in osteoporosis, and is also a consultant for the American Society for Bone and Mineral Research. We had a caller who couldn't wait through the news, Dr. Clark, and I'm sorry we weren't able to get to her, but her comment was that she was just diagnosed with osteoporosis, and she's 51 years old, and she's in a lot of pain. I didn't know what she wanted to say beyond that, but I guess I thought we should talk a little bit on how is osteoporosis diagnosed and what are the symptoms.
Okay, so typically the first time a person would know they have osteoporosis is when they break a bone, but short of that, the bone density test will tell us if you have a T-score below minus 2.5. That's essentially a bone density that's 2.5 standard deviations below average for young adults. In that range, we would diagnose osteoporosis, and that's probably what has happened to her. Now, these people in general, without fractures, do not have any pain, so that osteoporosis essentially is a silent condition, mm-hmm. like so many other medical conditions, that doesn't cause symptoms until a bone breaks. So if she has pain, the pain she's having is probably coming from more typical causes for pain, such as arthritis, a pinched nerve, a slipped disc, or other causes that can be treated with other approaches. And also, even if she has osteoporosis and decided to take medication, the medications we have for osteoporosis don't treat pain. They just prevent future fractures. Mm-hmm. So if she has pain, she may need to see a physical therapist. She may need other medication for that. But the osteoporosis is probably not related to the pain she's having.
Well, speaking of the physical therapist, there was another study that was talking about muscle strength and how that aids in preventing fractures.
Yeah, so it turns out, you know, if you have weak muscles, you tend to fall more. And if you fall more, you're likely going to break more often. So there's a natural connection between muscle weakness and low bone density or osteoporosis that would lead to fractures. And that's exactly what this study showed. They showed that people who had low muscle mass and didn't have very strong muscles, they're the ones actually who had worse risk of fractures even when they had osteoporosis, so that the chance they would break a bone was about double what it would have been had they just had the osteoporosis alone.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Linda in Milwaukee with us next. Hello, Linda.
Hi, thank you very much. I just was relating to that other previous caller, that older lady, 50-some years old. I was diagnosed with osteoporosis, and to be honest, I'm terrified because the commercials always, you know, say things about drugs, and I was told to take Fosamax, and I was reading about an article in China, and the women there supposedly, and I'm not saying this article is correct, are very thin. Their diagnosis of osteoporosis is very low, and they compare Fosamax to taking a pill, and your bones get really thick, porous, and brittle, actually, where, like, if you're walking through the woods, you can break a big piece of wood, even though it looks like your bones are getting thicker. They're actually getting porous and more brittle inside. And I got terrified after reading that. And then I saw that commercial, and I'm just wondering if there's other things. And I know exercise, I'm very active, I take calcium and vitamin D, but you can understand where people get scared after you hear these things and read these things. And is Fosamax actually really a good drug? And
all right, well, what about that? Is it is that one of the side effects? Is this study right?
Yeah, so, well, a couple of things. How these drugs work in people of different ethnic backgrounds is not as clear as it is in, say, the Caucasian population. We know in the U.S. and in Western Europe, where these drugs have been investigated extensively, what they do. China's a newer market. There's less studies in the Chinese population, and so there's information to be gained yet that really would help clarify the answer to that particular article. But in terms of these drugs, the way they work, they prevent bone loss, which generally means your bone density will increase. And with that, in some cases, if you increased your bone density too much, you had too much mineral in your bones, essentially, the bones could become brittle. So it remains, you know, a concern perhaps in some settings that that could occur. But in the vast majority of people who take these for the usual reason, for regular osteoporosis, it's not an issue. All right. And if you said, how do you know that? Well, they've done bone biopsies in people who took these drugs as part of the clinical trials and did not see any difference in the bone from a normal person, a healthy person who didn't take the drug, compared to the people who took the drug. So, you know, there's a lot of concern about side effects of medication. And like I said, I mean, this is where it's hard to give a blanket recommendation that everybody should take Fosamax, for example, because we know that there's potential side effects in some individuals. But that's where the individual doctor and patient have to discuss that and see whether it's right for them or not.
Is there an alternative to the Fosamax-type drugs?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, there's other medications, but they're all prescription medications. So if you're concerned about, you know, it being a prescription medication, it's more difficult to get around that. But if it's just the issue of whether it's a bisphosphonate or not, we have lots of other choices these days for other medications that could be used that are not bisphosphonate. And this is where, again, your situation, it'd be good to talk to your doctor and say, okay, so what else could I take if I didn't want to take Fosamax, or if I tried it and I didn't like it for some reason?
Thank you for the call, Linda. And I'm sorry for your worry. You know, talking about bone density and getting thicker, Sharon on Facebook wrote, my bones are too dense. They are plus 5 on the scale. No reason my doctor knows of. She says I'm 63.
Yeah.
Is that a problem?
Yeah, it can be. And so, you know, for example, there's certain medical conditions. Some of these are genetic, some are not. That cause very high bone density. So some causes for very high bone density are actually protective against fracture, but other causes, certain rare diseases like osteopetrosis, which is a very high bone density disease, actually increases the risk of fracture. And it turns out people who take fluoride in their diet or their drinking water, if you have huge amounts of fluoride anyway, not what's put in the water for preventing cavities, large amounts of fluoride in the diet will cause very dense bone that turns out it breaks more often, okay? So the answer is high bone density is generally protective, but in some cases it may not be.
Let's take another call from Patricia in Milwaukee. Hello, Patricia.
Good morning. Good morning, Dr. Clark. Linda sort of touched on a lot of what I was thinking of. I'm 63 years old. I was diagnosed about 8 years ago with osteoporosis because I'm a celiac.
Okay, yep.
And I've been through Fosamax, Forteo, Actinel, which gave me an ulcer, and then they switched me to Reclast. And it's, again, the question is, I've heard that you cannot take these drugs forever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, what do you do? And you talked about other drugs besides all of these others, right. Other things like what?
Okay. So, you know, you've listed probably, what, two-thirds of the ones that are currently available. But, for example, if you said what else is out there that you haven't mentioned, there is a newer drug called Prolia, denosumab, which is a antibody basically that blocks bone loss. It's not a bisphosphonate. It's not a hormone. It's just a protein basically that functions that way. So that would be a consideration in some people. You haven't mentioned something called calcitonin nasal spray, which is a salmon calcitonin from the fish that works in humans too that prevents bone loss. So that's another hormone, but it's not an estrogen-like hormone. There's something called Evista or raloxifene, which is a cousin of estrogen but has certain benefits of estrogen without some of the risks of estrogen. So those would be three other choices, at least, you know, from the list you've mentioned that are available. Mm-hmm. They're FDA approved. We know what they do. They could be considerations.
You can't be on these drugs forever, she said?
Yeah. So if you take a bisphosphonate, and this would include Fosamax, Actinel, Boniva, Reclast, and Related, those currently they would recommend not taking continuous therapy for longer than 5 years in the case of the tablet forms. And many physicians would say for Reclast, because it's given through an intravenous infusion, that shouldn't be used more than 3 years continuously. And then after that, there's the recommendation for a drug holiday to, in a sense, allow the skeleton to adjust. All of the other medications, though, you have to keep taking continuously because you can't stop them because they're not long-acting like the bisphosphonates are.
She mentioned that she was a celiac. Tom in Appleton wonders if there is a link between celiac disease and osteoporosis because he has a friend who has both.
Yeah, so when we see people in the clinic right now who have low bone density and they tell us they've had a hard time gaining weight, the first thing we think of is celiac disease because it's a very common link to osteoporosis. The feeling is that the autoimmune disease that leads to celiac disease, this gluten sensitivity or allergy that people have, does contribute to malabsorption. And if you're malabsorbing calcium and vitamin D along with everything else, you have a hard time gaining weight. But at the same time, you have a hard time getting your calcium and vitamin D to the levels they need to be. So there is a very strong link between celiac disease and osteoporosis. Sometimes just treating the celiac disease by itself makes the osteoporosis go away. So sometimes it doesn't. So it depends on the person.
We are talking about osteoporosis. It's prevention, it's treatment, new research. Talking with Dr. Bart Clark, who is with the Mayo Clinic, and we're welcoming your questions, we're welcoming your experiences. Are you suffering from osteoporosis, and how are you dealing with it? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, about 10 minutes before 7 now on this Thursday, October the 9th, talking about osteoporosis with Dr. Bart Clark from the Mayo Clinic. And our next caller is Kay in Madison. Hello, Kay.
Hi. I had a gastric bypass, and I was having stomach irritation with Fosamax, and so my doctor said she could justify putting me on Reclast, and which I've appreciated partly because it's only once a year. But does it work the same way as Fosamax? I don't quite understand.
Yeah, so Reclast is a cousin of Fosamax that basically works the same way Fosamax does. It's just that it has the convenience of being given through the vein instead of in a tablet form. So most people, when they take Fosamax, even till now, it's once a week with the way it's given. The reclast, as you mentioned, is once a year, and that one dose lasts you an entire year without taking any other medication for the osteoporosis. So it is very convenient.
Thank you, Kay. Good luck to you. Vicki in Fox Lake, Illinois, wants to know, where can people go for support, for help and information when they are diagnosed with osteoporosis?
Yeah, so, well, if your local physician doesn't have much to offer you or can't tell you what you need to know or answer all your questions, I would say if you're looking on the Internet, certainly the National Osteoporosis Foundation website is a very good source for clinical information on osteoporosis. The American Society for Bone and Mineral Research, ASBMR, that you mentioned there at the top of the program, also has a website with clinical information that might be helpful. And even the NIH has a website that has a lot of information on bone disease, including osteoporosis. And, of course, my own institution, Mayo Clinic, maintains a website. A lot of the local universities, and I know Madison and in Milwaukee, the universities there oftentimes will have website with information as well. So there is a lot of information out there that you can access, and a lot of the time is trying to filter through that information to find out what you want to know to answer your questions. So.
Let's take another call from Norma in Waukesha. Hello, Norma.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My problem is I'm 90 years old. I was diagnosed with osteoporosis several years ago, of course. I was on Fosamax for approximately 6 years. I was then taken off of it for 1 year. I was since April of this year, I've started ingesting it again. In June, I had 3 broken ribs, 3, 4, and 5. In September, I had 3 broken ribs, 4, 5, and 6. Is there a connection, the connection between osteoporosis and the broken ribs and the Fosamax, or can you help me out in any way?
Yeah, so, well, if you think about the way Fosamax is supposed to work, it prevents about half the fractures that people would have had. Okay, so when a person is on Fosamax and they break something, be it a rib or some other bone, the question always is, well, is it because the Fosamax wasn't working as expected, or is it one of these things that would have happened to you even if you'd never taken the Fosamax? And my own feeling on this is probably it's the latter, that you would have had the fracture most likely anyway. It's not the Fosamax causing the fracture, but Fosamax is not perfect. It doesn't prevent all fractures. And so probably what you're seeing is that sort of situation. Now, I would also say that if you keep breaking bones, and 6 fractures is a lot of fractures to have, I would be thinking also that maybe the Fosamax isn't the best choice for you and that you might benefit from one of the other drugs that would do a better job. But that decision, you know, I'd say talk to the physician who prescribed it to you and see what they think. And like I said, there's a lot of other choices they could give you, some of which are more powerful than the Fosamax. So.
Can I quick ask you, since I was off of it, I took it, like I say, about 6 years, and then I was off of it for about a year. In that year, was that completely out of my system?
No. So when you stop Fosamax after 5 or 6 years of taking it, it's going to take probably most cases 2 to 5 years to completely wash out of your system. So if you're off at a year, that's fine, you know, and then they put you back on it. You still have a fair amount of Fosamax from the first 5 or 6 years of therapy that's in you on top of what you're getting now. You know.
Good luck, Norma. Thank you for the call. So when you get bone fractures like Norma's broken ribs and you have osteoporosis, I mean, do they just snap even if you're just sitting in the chair?
Oh, yeah, they can. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are people who, you know, they cough and they'll break mm-hmm. a rib. There's other people who, they, you know, classically what I hear from my patients is they go to a family reunion, somebody gives them a bear hug, and they crack several ribs.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, you know, fairly common when you have osteoporosis, especially when you don't know it. But even if you do know it and you're on therapy sometimes, the same thing can still happen.
Let's go next to Louise in Platteville. Hello, Louise.
Good morning. Good morning. I would like to ask a question of the doctor about a vitamin D bed. I know nothing about it. I just know that they exist, and I wondered if that is an acceptable way to get vitamin D. I also would like to know how much I know you said a few minutes ago, but how much vitamin D is appropriate? I assume it depends on the person, but if I'm in my 80s, I would like to know how much I should take. I do plan to start taking it, and I would like to know how much. Also, I've been taking Actonol once a week for several years. Is that something that I should stop and change to something else because maybe it isn't effective anymore?
All right.
So let me try to briefly answer those. I think when you say a vitamin D bed, you might be referring to a tanning bed.
No, it's called a vitamin D bed.
All right. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I haven't either. I thought a tanning bed came to mind, but yeah.
It'd be a great idea if it worked, but I don't know if it does. You'd have to look at the information and ask your doctor, see what they think. But for the dose that they recommend, usually at your age, they would recommend on average at least 800 units a day of vitamin D to get the level in your blood up to where they want. Some people, of course, need more than that, and many people at your age would need somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 units a day to get your blood level up to where they would like it to be. All right. For the Actonel, if you take it longer than 5 years, same consideration as Fosamax, you ought to be thinking about coming off that for a drug holiday that would last somewhere between 2 and 5 years. But that decision you should let the local doctor make with you. So,
yeah. We've heard from mainly women. I'm going to go to a male caller, John in Port Wing. Hi, John.
Yeah, the doctor just scared me. I'm 92 years old, and annually I see my doctor, the physical. We never talked about, the strength of the bone.
No, you never had a bone density test, John.
Yeah, I never doctor mentioned.
Yeah.
The one thing I can tell you, he suggested a few years ago I should use D3. That's for the bones?
Vitamin D3.
Yep, that would be a great way to take vitamin D.
Yeah, and because we're almost out of time, men should also be screened for osteoporosis?
Right. Past age 65, the recommendation is they should be screened once and see whether they have it or not.
Yeah. Well, in our final minute, Dr. Clark, is there research in the works that, on the horizon that you're looking forward to?
Well, there's many studies underway, some of which will answer many of these same questions that have been asked by the callers today. Certainly the exciting things on the horizon in terms of new medications, there's a number of new treatments that are coming that should make this easier to control and work better than the current drugs that we have. But even with the current drugs that we have, taking the medication, if it's recommended, is a good thing in general.
Thank you so much for being with us.
All right, thank you.
Dr. Bart Clark, he is an endocrinologist with the Mayo Clinic, specializing in osteoporosis, also a counselor with the American Society for Bone and Mineral Research. The American Society for Bone and Mineral Research had its annual meeting over the weekend and released several studies related to osteoporosis. So we were talking about those and answering your questions today. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing this hour and directing it. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. Tomorrow, by the way, the start of our fall pledge drive. And we're going to be talking about rustic roads tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.